From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
He's a man with bold ideas who believes in education and in his beloved Baltimore. Many of his controversial public service decisions have been considered innovative and his choices revolutionary. From mayor to university president, he has been the consummate negotiator, the committed educator, the people's champion. Hello, I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today on the journey is Mr. Kurt Schmoke, president of the University of Baltimore. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Frederick. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you were born and raised in Baltimore. Tell us what that was like.
Well, both my parents are actually from the deep south. You know, sometimes they refer to Baltimore as being up south rather than down south. But my parents were from Georgia and North Carolina. They came to Baltimore, and they both had government jobs. And from the earliest time that I can recall, they all wanted me to go away to college. Now, I don't know whether that was they just wanted me out of the house or what, but no, I had parents who were very supportive of education, and even though they divorced when I was 12, they both remained very active in my life and focused on education.
So, having grown up in Baltimore and attended the public schools in Baltimore, what influenced your decision with respect to where you would attend university?
Well, you know, I thought a great deal about where I wanted to go. And even though your listeners can't see it, I actually was a football player. I actually and got recruited by a couple of schools to play. And I thought a great deal about it. But my high school coach pointed out to me one day as we looked around the field, he said, "You see these guys that are 6 feet two and 235 pounds?" Said, "Their life is going to be influenced by football in the future. Yours won't be. The football will become less and less important." So I stopped thinking about colleges in terms of sports and more in terms of academics, what it could open up, other doors it could open up for me. And so I ended up choosing Yale, much to the chagrin of my father, who was a Morehouse man. I tried to, you know, persuade him that, you know, Yale was kind of a northern Morehouse, but he didn't appreciate that.
I hear you. So and tell me about your life at Yale. You still played sports at Yale.
I did. I played sports. I played football and I played lacrosse because lacrosse was big in Baltimore. But I got injured and started to, you know, see sports more in perspective, that it was something that was, you know, a nice thing to do, but it wasn't the most important thing for me to do. But what it did do, however, was help me meet some lifelong friends. And one of the things that I did while I was at college, I was very concerned about some of the people that worked in our dining halls. And together with another student, we started a child care center that happens to still be in operation 45 years later in New Haven. But I mentioned that only because the name of the daycare center is the Calvin Hill Daycare Center. And Calvin Hill, most people would know him now as Grant Hill's father, but he was actually a great football player for Yale, for the Dallas Cowboys, and briefly for the Redskins. So I met Calvin because of football, and we have remained lifelong friends. And when we started that daycare center, he didn't hesitate to lend his name to it, and it helped us in raising money from Yale alumni. And so, as I said, it's still in operation today, and something that I think is a very important legacy of, you know, student activism, student involvement.
Well, I know, absolutely. And if I and you could probably paint this picture for us, but this child care center really was aimed at the minority workers who worked in the dining hall, as you described. So really, right, it was the cooks and the cleaners, etc.
That's true. What you know, many of us have jobs to work our way through college. And my first year at college, I worked in the dining halls, and it was listening to some of the people talking about the struggles that they have. And then my roommate was also worked in the dining halls, and we said, we just have to do something. And, you know, you just think about it, you know, 18, 19-year-olds on a college campus deciding they're going to open up a daycare center. But, you know, that's the one thing about universities. When you have people that are supportive of young folks with ideas, you know, anything's possible.
And as you link that to your student activism and you look at what's happening across college campuses today, right, what are some of your comparisons and contrasts as you look at that student activism?
Well, you know, I recognize that it's a very complicated situation. You know, one of the things that motivated a lot of activism at the time that I went to college was the Vietnam War. There was this, you know, big issue of the war, and also the kind of the tail end of this active civil rights movement. We didn't have big marches in the early 70s and late 70s when I went to law school, but we did still have the windup of the war, and that was motivating a lot of things. Today, it's a little bit different. You know, I see, the challenges of a global economy, jobs shifting around, uncertainty about the future, and then, of course, this summer, many issues arising out of, you know, the Ferguson shootings and Eric Garner case, Freddie Gray in Baltimore. All those things I see raising the issue of race relations even more than in recent years.
You're listening to The Journey. My guest today is the former mayor of Baltimore and current president of the University of Baltimore, Kurt Schmoke. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. To continue along the train of thought of, especially in when you look at in Baltimore and Freddie Gray, right, and that hotbed of activity, as you just described it, that we saw this summer, what do you think are some of the underpinnings that really are pushing those things to the forefront in the manner in which they're coming to the forefront today?
Well, it's pretty clear that the young people felt that they were just being disrespected by authority. It just so happened that it was police, but in the case of Freddie Gray, as you know, the state's attorney who charged the police charged six officers, three black, three white. So it wasn't just a race issue. It was a question of authority and a question of young people feeling that they were being put down, not listened to, and they kind of just lashed out. Now, fortunately, more of the young people actually were involved in constructive, peaceful protests, talking about issues that they wanted universities and others in power to address. And so I think there's been more constructive dialogue since the initial outburst last April.
Right. And when you look at that constructive dialogue, what do you see as potential solutions? Obviously, what's complicated, but having been the mayor of Baltimore and knowing as much as you know about the city, you know, what role do you see the universities playing, for instance, in even bringing some of those solutions to the forefront?
Well, among other things, you know, our mayor, and I believe the same in D.C., refers to the universities as anchor institutions of Baltimore. And as anchors, we are expected not only to help educate the next generation, but also to provide job opportunities, to purchase from local business people, to help be an economic force as well as an education force in the community. Some of the other universities have had difficulty in recruiting diverse faculty, and that's another issue that the students have raised. So I think there are a lot of different issues that can be addressed, but the most important thing is to listen to those concerns and address the young people as the future leaders that they are going to be.
Now, you've been on the Board of Trustees at Yale, as well as obviously having attended there.
Yeah.
Your Rhodes Scholarship you won while as a student at Yale.
Yeah.
Given some of the recent events at Yale University, which include, again, this concern about racism on campus, acceptance of minority students. What is your perspective from, you know, from your involvement with that institution?
Well, clearly there's a need for open and civil discussion. It did concern me a bit when on some of these campuses when people were shouted down if they had a different point of view. I mean, universities are places where we ought to have open and civil dialogue, and people ought to be able to, agree to disagree. I recall a situation when I was a student, and there was a concern about the ROTC on campus, again, during the Vietnam War, and some people wanted it eliminated. And we ended up having a huge campus meeting, like a town hall meeting. 2,500 people came, and there was a lot of conversation, and the president was there. I won't encourage you to do this, but he actually had a vote. He said, all right, we're here, and Dr. Frederick, you won't believe it, but the vote actually ended in a tie that evening, split right down the middle, and people just thought they had their say. It ended up that ROTC did leave campus. There, it's now back after so many years. But it just showed the importance of letting people have their say, hearing from others, and trying to reach a civil resolution. And that's what we really need.
Right. And you know, as you pointed out, I think I share your concerns in that the discourse, I'm not sure how civil it is, and I'm not sure how much listening is taking place, to your point. And I think finding a ready solution for that as quickly as possible is necessary. But in this day and age of social media, where everyone is basically a news anchor,
right,
and can get their opinion out, and they don't necessarily have to take any feedback, mechanisms do you think are there for our campuses to use?
Well, you know, that's one reason why I'm a big proponent of town hall meetings, because there you have to communicate on more than just your device. I mean, you have to sit there, listen to another person, then get up and make your comments. Also, take some questions. I know that recently I had some students come to see our vice president for student affairs. They didn't have demands, they had concerns, but she was able to say to them, can you document what you're saying? There was some question about there being, quote, microaggressions on campus. And I said, well, is that more than just somebody was rude to you? And the student said, yes. We asked for it to be documented. Then we could respond to it. Some of the other issues that have been raised weren't well documented. And the students basically went away and said, well, apparently that was somebody's impression, not backed up by facts. So we'll move on.
Okay. No, that's excellent. Now, you were dean of the law school here, vice president and general counsel, as well as interim provost, and certainly, as you know, because of our endearing friendship and my opportunity to work with you, I certainly miss you not being here. As you look at your time at Howard University, what were some of your takeaways from that experience?
I love being at Howard. I mean, Howard University gave me the credential to become a university president. I'm sure that, after leaving office, I was mayor for 12 years, but nobody offered me a university presidency after that. I spent 9 years as dean of one of the country's greatest institutions, which is the Howard University School of Law. And I really enjoyed that, and I felt like I was nurturing a new generation of advocates for social change. Excuse me. I enjoyed that a great deal. And then working with you, I learned a great deal about the rest of university life and how you move forward when you have challenges, whether those challenges are financial or other challenges. This institution's been around for a long time, and we want to make sure that it stays here and grows for the next generation. And now I'm trying to use those lessons to make the University of Baltimore an even better school.
Well, they certainly are lucky to have you. Thanks for being here. My guest today has been Kurt Schmoke, the president of the University of Baltimore, but certainly a Howard man in my opinion. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. Please join me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.